So.
In regard to the Twitter, now known as the X, and the Dane County municipal accounts, Joe, have you banned Twitter?
Well, we're no longer going to be using Twitter, I think is probably the...
Is that the same as banning Twitter, sir?
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 till 6 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. A massive 7.6 magnitude earthquake has shaken central Japan. Video captured scenes at a train station in Kanazawa City where travelers ran out, suitcases in tow. Tsunami warnings have been issued with waves as high as 16.5 feet possible. Reporter Lucy Kraft is north of Tokyo.
The meteorological agency has said that this could drag out for days, even a week. We could continue to see strong aftershocks, which in turn could continue to trigger strong tsunami. So we're really in a wait-and-see situation at this point.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he sees the war in Gaza continuing well into 2024. Correspondent Ian Lee reports from Tel Aviv.
As the clock struck midnight, sirens rang in the new year across Israel. Hamas fired a barrage of rockets, lighting up the sky for revelers in Tel Aviv as Israel's Iron Dome missile defense system intercepted most of them.
Here in the U.S., fireworks lit up the night sky. CBS's Wendy Gillette was in New York City.
The Waterford crystal ball descended from a pole high above Times Square, ringing in 2024. Couples kissed and celebrated, showered by 3,000 pounds of confetti dropped from the buildings above.
Lots of people are getting raises this year. David Atkins heads the Council of State Governments.
Half the states where minimum wage workers will experience an increase, many of those states, though, will have the increase occur as a result of linking the minimum wage to cost of living increases.
A new rule kicks in California today, banning guns in most public places, including playgrounds and libraries. It's that time of year, and a lot of Chicagoans are resolving to do things differently.
Planning to hopefully start working out.
My New Year's resolution is to get a job.
I haven't made one at this time. I'm afraid of not living up to them.
I never keep them.
In Pasadena, they've been lining up for the Tournament of Roses parade since yesterday.
I'm most interested in the cars because they have, like, very cool designs. So that's why I'm very excited for this experience.
The 5.5-mile parade will also feature floats, marching bands, and performances by Michelle Williams, David Archuleta, and Jordan Sparks. Audra McDonald will serve as Grand Marshal. Financial markets are closed this New Year's Day. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
News talk and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
130 throws over the middle, picked off.
Moore.
Backside pressure, down he goes.
Game.
To the end zone, touchdown, Braylon Allen.
The Badgers.
The Tigers.
Live from Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, Florida, it's the ReliaQuest Bowl. Join us Monday. Our coverage begins at 9 a.m. on your home for Wisconsin football. The Badger Sports Network from Learfield on Wisconsin.
It is going to be partly cloudy here on New Year's Day. We'll get to right around 30 for a high this afternoon with wind out of the west at 5 to 15, although the wind will start to pick up by late this afternoon. Tonight, clear, breezy 22. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high right around 33. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 22.
Hello, and welcome to this special New Year's edition of The Kitchen's Open. Today's show will include several of my favorite episodes we aired over the course of this year. I'm grateful to you, our faithful listeners, and also to our co-hosts who participate in this food adventure every Monday morning during the 9 o'clock hour. The following three segments feature Beth Habhegger, James Maloff, and myself, Melissa Kay, as we learn about cake, cell-cultured meat, and bacon double cheeseburgers. We'll start with the one Beth and I did on cake on January 23, 2023. We cover the history of cakes starting as far back as 2600 BC. We'll fill you in on why cakes are used for celebrations like birthdays, weddings, and anniversaries. And we'll end the segment with cake versus pie. Although it was a risk taking the stance I did at the end of the segment, I think Seth will maybe forgive me. Sit back and enjoy this episode of The Kitchen's Open about cake.
Time for the kitchen to be open.
All right, it's Monday, January 23rd, 2023, and we're going to talk about cake.
Cake!
Yeah, who doesn't like cake? Well, some people don't. Maybe that's sad for them, but cake is a common feature at celebrations. Most of us have blown out candles on our birthday cake at some point in our lives. My mom used to make my favorite cake every year on my birthday, German chocolate cake with coconut pecan frosting. I don't ever remember having it any other time of the year. Probably because she didn't really like coconut.
Oh, no.
I don't even know why it was my favorite, to be honest. I just really like the frosting.
Yeah?
And chocolate.
Of course. Well, and mine was red velvet cake.
Yeah, hey. There you go.
That's always when I had it, too.
Well, let's look at the history of cakes, how they came to be and why. Cake has been around since ancient times. The word cake comes from the Old Norse word kaka. But the first cakes were quite different from the ones we have today.
Right, because often you need an oven to make a cake. That's kind of a necessary part. And ancient Egyptians were the pioneers in baking. Mm. So the practice can be traced back to 2600 BC in Egypt.
That's a long time ago.
It's a long time ago in a country far, far away. While baking seems to have started with bread, the first cakes weren't all that different from that. They were bread-like with eggs and butter added and then sweetened with honey. Hmm. They were round in shape and quite small. Forms weren't used during baking, and instead the dough was formed into a ball and placed into the oven. The Romans then added nuts and dried fruits for flavor and made the first fruit cakes, which we talked about not long ago.
Yes, indeed. Well, cakes evolved with the times as a result of increased access to ingredients such as refined sugar and advances in technology like more reliable ovens. Modern cakes have their beginnings in Europe sometime in the mid-17th century. Bakers started using hoops or round molds to shape the cakes placed on flat baking trays. Mm. These hoops were made out of wood, metal, or paper. And it was around this time that they started putting icing on the top of the cake. Now, these were boiled concoctions of sugar, egg whites, and sometimes flavoring. They would pour the icing over the cake and then put it back in the oven. After it was removed and cooled, the icing would form a hard, glossy, ice-like coating.
Hence the term icing. Awesome. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until the 19th century that cakes really started to resemble the ones that we are more familiar with today. Mm-hmm. Extra refined white flour and baking powder entered the scene, and it took the baking world by storm. Layer cakes started to appear, and buttercream frostings started to replace the traditional boiled icings. Mm-hmm. And buttercream is so easy to make with just powdered sugar and butter.
Yeah.
You know, mixing that together makes great icing. Mm-hmm. Temperature-controlled ovens made cake baking much easier, and the Industrial Revolution made ingredients cheaper and more readily available to everyone.
Mm-hmm. And cake was a very common, like, after dessert meal. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like, after your dinner dessert.
Yeah.
I think my grandma made a cake a week.
Oh, yeah. I just made one the other day, actually on Saturday, as the dessert for when Seth's family was over.
Nice.
So there's special things that you can make, and they're easy to make now, too.
Right. So why are cakes used to celebrate birthdays, weddings, and anniversaries? There are a lot of desserts to choose from, yet cake is the traditional go-to celebration food when the holiday is about a person or a couple, typically. So I found a phrase on foodtimeline.org that I thought was really lovely. Cakes are served at special occasions because they represent our best culinary offering, honoring our most loved people.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't it?
That's great. Just.
Well, sugar and chocolate used to be really expensive and hard to obtain. But even now, cake says you're important and we love you.
It's true. And if we look at ancient cultures, the significance of cake eating cake at celebrations has a basis in ancient ritual. Actually, in ancient Greece, people would traditionally celebrate the births of their gods with cakes. For the celebration of the goddess Artemis, they would bake a round cake and honor her and symbolize the moon at the same time. So some even theorize that decorating the cake with lit candles was to emulate the glow of the moon.
Uh-huh.
It also theorized that a round cake is meant to symbolize the cyclical nature of life. So perhaps that's why cakes are served at birthdays. So, there you go. Thank you, the Lion King.
So, or maybe cakes are round to symbolize the sun or the moon. Mm. In China, people made cakes at harvest time to honor their moon goddess, Heng O. And they knew that the moon played an important role in the cycle of the seasons. They made round cakes in the shape of the moon as a reward to the lunar goddess. Mm. The ancient Celts baked and ate Beltane cakes on the first day of spring as part of their celebration. They made the cakes round to celebrate the spring sun. As part of the Beltane festival, they would roll the cakes down a hill to imitate solar movement and, they hoped, ensure the continued motion of the sun.
So the question is, did they eat it afterwards?
I don't know, but there was another part to this story where if it broke apart when it got down to the bottom of the hill, there was something about there was a death that would occur within the next year or so.
Oh. Yeah. So, but by the 13th century, birthdays were celebrated for children with cakes lit with candles. Mm-hmm. The celebration was called Kinderfest,
yes,
and the
Germany.
Candles stirred for light of life, which is a wonderful symbol. Mm-hmm. It's actually well connected with our denomination as well. There's some history of Zinzendorf, who influenced our denomination, being one of the first people to use birthday candles and blow them out. So they would burn the candles all day, not like what we do now, just light them and blow them out right away. They were lit all day and replace them when they burn down. Before the cake was eaten, the child would blow out the candles and make a wish. Now, this is the part that often we'd go, well, why are we doing that? The smoke was believed to carry the wish to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons why you didn't speak it.
Right.
You just thought it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would rise up.
And you can't tell anybody or it won't come true.
Exactly.
You know, I can't help but wonder how much wax was on that cake before they could eat it.
It's a good thing most cat wax can be edible. And traditionally it was
you can
beeswax.
Peel it off.
Yeah.
All right. Now for the eternal question at this studio. Cake versus pie.
Mm-hmm.
You all know during our morning show, we have the Misty's Birthday and Anniversary Club where we get to promote the restaurant and the fact that if it's your birthday, you get a free piece of Brian's pie.
Yeah.
Which is delicious, I might add.
Absolutely.
So let's take a brief look at reasons you may have a hard time deciding between cake or pie for your birthday.
So pies have also been around since ancient times, but they were most likely not sweet at first. The early Romans made pies in reeds, which were used to hold the filling, but not eaten. Pies appeared in England during the 12th century, and the crust of the pie was often referred to as a coffin with a Y. Sometimes pies were made using fowl, and the legs were often left hanging over the sides of the dish, so they could be used as handles.
Did you use a bird leg for?
Fruit pies started to appear around the 16th century. In America, early colonials baked their pies in long, narrow pans, which they called coffins with an eye.
I find that hilarious.
Well, if you think about it, it's kind of
coffin shaped.
Yeah, it is, and it's holding in something that you want, or something dear, right?
Right, something precious.
So they called them coffin, like the crust in England, but like we did with a lot of English words, we Americanized it.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't until the American Revolution that they started using the term crust for pies.
All right. Now I'm going to take a stance that might upset certain individuals who will not be named. You know who you are.
Not in this room.
Cake is better than pie. Now, this is just my opinion, but I found an article on myrecipes.com by a wonderful lady named Stacy Ballas who totally backs me up on this.
Okay.
She gives pretty compelling reasons for her stance, and I will share them with you.
Very nice.
Now, you know how they say bad pizza is still sort of good?
Mm-hmm.
Well, bad pie is super bad. Think soggy or raw crust, soupy fillings, weepy meringue, or over-whipped cream. Bad cake is still sort of good. Even if it's dry, there's still frosting.
If it's more dense than airy, I guess I see that.
Now, do you know anyone who gets a hankering for grocery store pie? people do you know that love grocery store cake? He doesn't count.
It's not him, believe it or not.
All right, good.
But he's on board with it. But no, and the ironic thing is, there's something with store-bought cakes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a richness, but store-bought pies tend to be more dried out
and bland.
Yeah,
yeah. So many of our grocery stores have wonderful bakeries,
and they
make amazing cake.
Absolutely.
We'll get to the reason why here. This next one, pie is hard to make.
It is.
It takes skill and patience and practice. But you can make cake with a light bulb. Easy Bake Oven, anyone? How many of us had one of those growing up?
Yep.
All right. Next, pie has nowhere to hide.
That's
true. You can't really fix a pie that didn't turn out. But cake? If it's dry, soak it in a simple syrup or amaretto and add whipped cream. If it's too bland, add a filling in between the layers or jazz up your frosting.
Yeah.
Too sweet? Do the opposite.
Exactly.
And when it comes to decorating, cake wins hands down. With pie, you can get fancy with the top. You can do lattice or designs in the vent holes or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to make a Grogu or a unicorn-shaped pie.
No.
Cake decorating ideas are endless.
It is true.
Now, go ahead.
And it's not just what you put on top, but the way that you can create the layers and build the structure, where you can't do that with a pie.
I mean, think wedding
cakes. You
can't
structure pie.
No, you can't do a multi-tiered pie at a wedding.
It is true.
So now don't get me wrong. I love desserts. And as long as there's not too much dairy involved, I will eat it, pie included. But it better be Brian caliber level of pie.
Yes, absolutely. So in conclusion, you know, although there are good pies out there, cake is amazing.
Yes.
And represents celebration and love. Enjoy someone you can and live in the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe just go get a little mini cake at a bakery
somewhere. They have them now where they're like individual servings.
Absolutely.
And individual, but you still get like four pieces
exactly.
of pie with that.
Life is too short not to enjoy cake or pie, if that is your preference, Seth. And with that, I think the kitchen is
we'll
closed.
We'll close the kitchen.
Oh, that was so good. Oh, that was so good. I would not want to be either of you when Seth walks in. But I think it was a great segment. No, that was so much fun.
That's why I'm leaving early today.
Right on. Melissa, that segment, so cake.
One day it's bone-chilling cold. The next, the sun is shining. Hey, it's Wisconsin. Don't like the weather? Wait 10 minutes. It'll change. Sooner or later, the snow will go away. But right now, it's freezing cold. And all that cold weather can cause freeze-ups in your holding tank or septic pipe system. So be sure that you keep an eye out for trouble. And call Crockett Septic to help you if you encounter a jam. Call Crockett Septic today at 715-712-3456. Crockett Septic, where the trucks smell like sweet cherry pie.
Crockett Septic serves you near or far. Holding tanks and septics pump right there in your yard. They got porta potties ready for you too. They'll pump away that stinky nasty poo. Crockett Septic, be there in a jiff. Crockett Septic, no more nasty whiff. Crockett Septic, they won't make you cry. Their bumper trucks smell just like cherry pie.
Hey, everybody. Glad you could join us. I'm Tim Hubbelt, better known as the Polka Guy, on the Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show.
Join Tim every Saturday and Sunday for a great variety of polkas, waltzes, and more. Wake up at 7 a.m. on Saturday morning to get the weekend started on the right foot, then enjoy a lively Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. Same great show, two different times, one fun weekend. The Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show, 7 a.m. Saturdays and 1 p.m. Sundays, only on WFHR, locally grown radio.
The Morning Show on WFHR. It's serious comedy.
Where you commit to walking 3 miles or doing 30 minutes on a bike every day in December.
You know, that's good. That's a decent goal. I have that goal. You know how many days I've reached it in the last month? One. Obviously, exercise produces endorphins, and endorphins make us happy, and happy people don't kill their husbands.
Weekdays from 8 to 10, right here on locally grown radio.
Children are the greatest joy and our best hope for a better future. Friends, they are the future. But did you know that millions of kids right here in our own backyard are facing hunger every day? Without healthy food, it's harder to grow, to thrive, to feel their best.
The impact when children don't have enough to eat is tremendous, because when you're hungry and your basic needs aren't being met, you cannot learn.
Every child deserves to be fed. This is a problem we know how to solve. Food is not just food. It's energy, health, confidence, hope, and even love. Yes, love.
Breakfast in the classroom contributes to kids being more focused, which leads to higher grades, and simply just their well-being.
Thank you!
Learn more about how No Kid Hungry is helping end child hunger in America at help.nokidhungry.org.
Hi, this is Joe Cordell of Cordell & Cordell. The holiday season should remind us that faith and family are the most important things in life, and we hope that you succeed in coming together this holiday season with those you love and in the process creating some generational memories. Holidays have this magical power to magnify small things to ever greater memories over time. What a return on investment. Happy holidays.
Schedule an appointment with one of Cordell & Cordell's Madison area attorneys. 1110 Fourier Drive, Suite 120, Madison, Wisconsin, 53717.
Welcome back to our extended version of The Kitchen's Open on WFHR. This next episode aired on April 3rd, where we talked extensively about some cultured meat. Could this fascinating product potentially be something we find in grocery store meat departments in the near future? Stay tuned to find out with Beth, James, and I when we discuss cultured meat.
You know how we kick off 9 o'clock hour on Mondays?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's Monday, April 3rd, and we want to begin our show by thanking our sponsors. The Kitchen's Open is sponsored by Chatterbox Catering. Today's topic is sell cultured meat. That's right. We touched on it a couple of times last week, and that got me interested. So we dug into it a bit, and we're going to share with you what we found, but with experts from several specific sources, because I don't know that much about it.
We're going to explain what it is and the science behind it best we can.
And tell you who has it, how much it costs, and possibly when you'll be able to use it in recipes.
I'll fill in as many of the other bits and pieces as I can, although I think this meat is actually grown without the extra bits.
Come on.
Okay, James, you fill him in on the science part. You're good at that.
Excellent. Well, I have to get my science voice.
I'll be sharing from an article, the Good Food Institute, giphy.org, called The Science of Cultivated Meat. It says this food product is cultivated meat, also known as cultured meat. It is genuine annual meat, including seafood and organ meats, that is produced by cultivating animal cells directly. This production method eliminates the need to raise and farm animals for food.
And I will be reading from an article in The Counter titled, Lab-Grown Meat is Supposed to be Inevitable. The science tells a different story. September 22nd, 2021, their website is thecounter.org. This article was written shortly after the Good Food Institute, or GFI, a nonprofit that represents the alternative protein industry, published a techno-economic analysis, a TEA, that projected the future costs of producing a kilogram of cell-cultured meat.
Now, it's possible that sometime in the future we could be eating meat that wasn't grown in a backyard or a field or a concentrated animal feeding operation, also known as a CAFO. It's much closer than you might think, and in other parts of the world, it's already happening. Lab-grown meat is real meat. They say on BonAppetit.com in an article titled, Will I See Lab-Grown Meat in the Supermarkets Anytime Soon? And that's from January 20th of 2023. Whatever you want to call it, it's real meat. Instead of killing billions of animals each year, it's grown in a sterile lab from a few cells. That might sound like the narrative arc of your stoner cousin's self-published sci-fi novel, but actually it's already in motion.
Cultivated meat is made of the same cell types arranged in the same or similar structure as animal tissues, thus replicating the sensory and nutritional profiles of conventional meat. So if it's replicating how it tastes and how it benefits the body naturally, or nutritionally, they're saying it's the same or better than the cow in your farmer's field.
These advancements in technology, the pitch went well, would fundamentally change the way human societies interact with the planet, making the care, slaughter, and processing of billions of farm animals the relic of a barbaric past. We would be able to grow the meat by itself without giant factory farms with tons of waste and with much less of an impact on the environment. And bonus, still feed the world. That sounds positive.
The first examples of cultivated meat came from the before the public eye back in 2013. Dutch scientist Mark Post unveiled the first cultivated meat burger on live television back in 2013. 2 years later, the first four cultivated meat companies were founded. The industry has grown to more than 60 companies on six continents, backed by $450 million plus in investments, each aiming to produce cultivated meat products.
Yes, and dozens more companies have formed to create technology solutions along the value chain. That means not only are there companies working to produce cultivated meat, there are other companies supporting the supply chain those companies need. So packaging, transporting, the actual production of, so giant vats.
Yes, they are actually grown in vast stainless steel bioreactors.
Okay.
Yeah, the product itself has gone through many names along this journey. It started with vat meat.
Oh, that's appetizing.
Yeah, no. From there, the name progressed to lab meat. Not necessarily not much better. And then was the more widely known as cultured meat, much like a brewed beer. Mm. Now, the name for it is cultured meat. In a sciencefocus.com article called What is lab grown meat? How it's made, environmental impact, and more, published on June 9th of 2022, they say there is less risk of contamination from disease and chemicals as they are produced in a sterile environment.
Good Food Institute says the manufacturing process begins with acquiring and banking stem cells from an animal. These cells are then grown in bioreactors known among us as cultivators at high densities and volumes. Similar to what happens inside an animal's body, the cells are fed an oxygen-rich cell culture medium made up of basic nutrients such as amino acids, glucose, vitamins, and inorganic salts, and supplemented with proteins and other growth factors.
So the scientists do their thing and cause the skeletal muscle, fat, and connective tissue to differentiate themselves. This process takes between 2 to 8 weeks, depending on what type of meat. Now get this, GFI.com says some companies are pursuing a similar strategy to create milk and other dairy products.
I wonder if they could make lactose free for you.
I would absolutely try it if they did.
Mm-hmm.
That's the issue here. Will people even want to try this?
Well, in a Reuters.com article titled Lab-Grown Meat Moves Closer to American Dinner Plates on January 23, 2023, they say that in the 2022 Journal of Environmental Psychology, they found that 35% of meat eaters and 55% of vegetarians would be too disgusted to try cultivated meat. Well, what do you both think? Would you try it?
I think I would at least try it. It may be one of those things where if you want to get people to try it, you don't tell them what it is till after they've had it.
Possibly.
When we first moved here, my dad had some friends on the construction site, and he comes home, and he's like, he makes a bunch of burgers for us. We sit down, and we're eating them, enjoying them. He's like, he's not sitting down and eating like the rest of us, and he never does that. My father loves to eat, and he's just watching us eat, and it felt a little weird. What's going on here and everything? And he tells us, you guys ready? It's deer. Like, it's like, what? Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, it's venison. It's like, as city people, we had never had this before.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty wild because where we grew up in Chicago, we had the United Nations. We tried a little bit of everything from every culture, and we thought we had tried it all. We love venison in our house, and we would have never tried it. May have never even tried it had my dad not kind of pulled one over on us. So I agree with you, Beth. I think that one of the best ways to do this is you can't lie to consumers, obviously.
No.
But I think that on the front of it, like, doing the on-air things, we have a billion cooking shows. Having cooking shows incorporating more of this meat and more of this stuff in their products, normalizing it. The more and more we do it, the more and more we're repetition, the more and more we see it, the better it is. I will say this, whether we're going to try it or not, we probably need to get this science down.
Right.
Because we can't count on...
figure it out.
Yeah, we have to figure something out. We can't keep doing things the way we've been doing them.
Well, and if we think about it, a lot of the food that we eat has been processed. How often have we been told about that? Our potato products are one of the worst. To have something like this that was scientifically developed specifically for this, we found benefits to all of that happening in other areas of our life. Why wouldn't we want to do that in cooking and food as well?
Yeah.
And it's real meat. That's the thing too. It's not processed in the same way that we process like plant-based meats or protein replacement foods. So I'd try it.
And before we get back to the science of this, I do have to say as a side note, Melissa sent me this article last night, and I had a couple classes, had a bunch of stuff going on, bunch of grading to do last night. Thanks a lot, Mel, because I got on I went down a rabbit hole with this where I was up for another half an hour at least just diving into this topic. It's so fascinating.
It was a long article, and I'm sorry.
No, I'm just teasing. I appreciate the work, and I just letting the audience look behind the curtain a little bit. Melissa wanted some discussion with this. Going into it, I was thinking about it. I'm like, I don't think I've ever discussed this with anybody. I think this is the first time I've ever talked about this subject with anybody. So not only do I think it's a great topic, but I find it very interesting. I think that it's something that we do need to discuss more and more. And it's kind of weird. I've talked about a lot. Mm-hmm. It's kind of my job. And the fact that I have not had a discussion about this before, really, like an in-depth one like we're having now, I think that stands out. So I think it's just good to talk about. Mm-hmm. Now, to get back to the science, Giphy.com states, prospective life cycle assessments indicate that cultivated meat will use significantly less land and water, emit fewer greenhouse gases, and reduce agriculture-related pollution and eutrophication, or icky green stuff, in our lakes. they got to change the name of that to just icky green stuff.
It's very descriptive of what it is. Like, you'll find in, like, peat well in late summer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that green stuff is gross, and it reduces the amount of oxygen and sunlight for plants and fish. But there's also the cost factor to keep in mind.
Yeah. So, like, right now, the cost is astronomically high. Like, $50 for a lab-grown chicken nugget.
Prepared independently for Good Food Institute by the research consulting firm CE Deft, and using proprietary data provided under a non-disclosure agreement by 15 private companies, the document showed how addressing a series of technical and economic barriers could lower the production price from over $10,000 per pound today to about $2.50 per pound over the next 9 years. That's an astonishing 4,000-fold reduction. Ooh. That would bring the price of a quarter pounder from $2,500 to about 63 cents.
It's possible that in 5 to 10 years, mm-hmm. the price of conventional meat could meet the price of grown meat. The extremely expensive lab-grown or cultivated meat will eventually grow less expensive as people get more accustomed to the idea and production ramps up. It could be in restaurants by maybe this year and in stores by the year 2028. The FDA just gave their second approval.
There's only one country where people purchase cultivated meat right now. According to ScienceFocus.com, people in Singapore already can. Tetrix company, Good Meat, has been producing and selling its chicken in Singapore since December of 2020 at special events, both in an upscale restaurant, hotel restaurant, and the legendary Mr. Lou's Hawker Stall.
So according to this website, IEatIShootIPost.com,
great name.
Yes.
This legendary stall was founded by the late Mr. Lou Nayap Tan, who started selling curry rice along the Pai Lai Street in Taejong Pangar right after the Second World War. It's moved twice since then, and the current owner, Mr. Lou Kia Chi, age 63, said Lou's Hainanese curry rice is in its final location in the center of Tiang Bahru, unless he's able to find a suitable person to take over the legendary stall.
This hawker stall in Singapore has been making curry rice in the same way for 76 years. Goodmeat.com, the company who is producing the cultivated meat, says, "It seems odd, this mixing of new and old, of tradition and revision, but to Lu Kaiqi, always affectionately referred to as Mr. Lou, it makes sense that history runs through the humble hawker. I think tradition and modernization do not clash with each other," Lou said. "When I first learned about this cultivated chicken, I saw it as a great invention for humanity." And his customers seem to be happy with the results. That's saying a lot for a stall that often has a line around the block at 8 a.m. People come for consistency, and they're still tasting that.
Now let's look at the environmental impact. They have found that meat processed this way instead of the traditional farm method has less of an environmental impact. It has more of an impact than plant-based protein crops, however. It has about the same as plant-based meat. On DiscoverMagazine.com, in an article titled, What is Cell-Cultured Meat and When Can You Try It?, July 9th, 2021, it states in a 2018 paper, Hannah Tusamadio, a professor at the Helsinki Institute of Sustainability Science, wrote, when comparing the environmental impacts of cultured meat with plant-based foods, the available estimates show that cultured meat has higher greenhouse gas emissions and energy use compared to unprocessed plant-based protein crops, such as beans and peas. But emissions are comparable with processed vegetarian meat substitutes.
So companies are seeing this as a potential gold field. TheCounter.org states, with its techno-economic analysis findings in hand, the Good Food Institute has worked tirelessly to argue for massive public investments. Its top policy recommendation, according to GFI's in-depth analysis of the TIA results, is aimed at forward-thinking governments. They should increase public funds for research and development into cultured meat technology in order to seize the opportunity and reap the benefits of becoming global leaders in the space.
So will it actually be better for the environment? ScienceFocus.com says, the truth is, we can't know until mass production is happening. Modeling the potential impacts of a fast-moving biotech industry that's still in development is subject to many ifs and buts.
Land not used for cultivated meat could be used to grow plant-based proteins, nature, and extra renewable energy production. This change would most likely produce less CO2 emissions. It further states it certainly has a lot of potential because it directly offers a more sustainable alternative to conventional meats. It is a more effective way of converting crops into meat, and therefore much less land is needed to produce these crops.
But the production will really have to increase for that even to be a possibility. According to the Reuters.com article, author Leah Douglas says the Upside facility in Emeryville, California, produces 4,000 pounds of cultivated meat per year, compared to the 106 billion pounds of meat produced in the U.S. in 2021.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with this and if any of us will be able to try cultivated meat anytime soon.
Could it be any worse than a non-kosher hot dog? I mean, let's be honest here.
I don't know, James. I've heard a lot of things about hot dogs, and I usually eat them without thinking about those things I've heard. I can't imagine that eating meat grown in a sterile environment could be any worse. I really don't.
Right. I mean, if you think about what is actually in the hot dog, which is all the leftover parts.
The bits.
Yeah.
Yes. The offal.
Yeah. Yeah. At least you would know with the cultured meat that it's healthier. It's more in a more controlled environment.
Mm-hmm. And it's all from the same animal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally.
And again, I think that whether we like it, we don't like it, whether we think it's a good thing, we think it's a bad thing, I almost think none of this, like, it's open, it's a good discussion, but it almost doesn't matter. It's going to happen.
Right.
There's way too much money. There's way too much invested in this for it's going another direction. I don't know for how long we'll have both options where we have this cultured meat and you know, you're used the meat you're used to. It's only a matter of time before we're left with only one.
Right.
I think that we'll always have both to some degree. I just think that the price, like you mentioned earlier, the price of the cultivated meat is going to come down. The price of, like, pasture-grown animals is going to come up.
Yeah.
Because there will be less of them. The demand for the cultured meat is going to become more because the price is coming down. And at some point, I think they'll surpass each other where, you know, like already Wagyu beef and things like that are uber expensive. Mm-hmm. But I think that the price will go up and they'll always be around.
Yeah. Good discussion, guys. Good discussion.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us on this edifying discussion on cultured meat. So would you try it? And would you like to see it offered in a restaurant? Tell us on our WFHR Facebook page.
A good steak is already $28 to over $100, depending on what you get. Would you be willing to pay for a steak that was grown and not butchered?
As long as it
how much?
Yeah. As long as it tastes like steak and doesn't need any sauce, I will try it. It's got to taste like real meat. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
And with that, we'll close the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Be sure to be listening every Monday in the 9 o'clock hour for The Kitchen's Open.
130 throws over the middle, picked off.
Moore.
Backside pressure, down he goes.
Game.
To the end zone. Touchdown, Braylon Allen.
The Badgers. The Tigers. Live from Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, Florida, it's the Reliant Quest Bowl. Join us Monday. Our coverage begins at 9 a.m. on your home for Wisconsin football. The Badger Sports Network from Learfield on Wisconsin.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver, and we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. My Grandpa Lou is the reason why my dad and I started racing, and I'm really proud to follow in his tracks. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. I've learned a lot on this journey with my Grandpa Lou, and the memories of my grandpa will always be with me. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Talking about Alzheimer's can be really tough. But if you notice something, have a conversation with your loved one. Encourage them to see a doctor or offer to go with them. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. The Alzheimer's Association provides care, support, and research to help you take control of the situation with your family and manage the disease together. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. Visit alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Happy holidays from WFHR. It's that time of the year when you share Christmas cheer with people that you know. No matter where you go, you can always see a glow in the people you meet as you walk down the street. The magic really shows. Happy holidays from WFHR. With this song that we sing, we hope to bring happiness to your heart. And for the new year, we wish for you the best. Merry Christmas to you from WFHR.
Your place for this area's news, talk, and sports. We are Locally Grown Radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
It is going to be partly cloudy here on New Year's Day. We'll get to right around 30 for a high this afternoon with wind out of the west at 5 to 15, although the wind will start to pick up by late this afternoon. Tonight, clear, breezy, 22. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high right around 33. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 22.
This final episode today is one that I had a lot of fun writing. This particular Monday landed on James Maloff's birthday. And because we all know how much James loves bacon double cheeseburgers, I had no choice but to pick on him during this February 20th episode of The Kitchen's Open. This is actually before James was a regular participant in the episode, and Beth and I didn't let him talk very much. But if you were listening the next month, he tried to take over during our episode on meat and bread and convince us that a bacon double cheeseburger actually counts as a sandwich and that he had every right to contribute being the local expert and all. Well, you all know James. If you want to catch that or any of our previous episodes of The Kitchen's Open, you can find them at civicmedia.us under the Shows tab. Scroll down and find our Mornings with WFHR, Sunshine in a Coffee Cup logo. You can look back through all the previously aired episodes of the show and find The Kitchen's Open on Mondays during the 9 o'clock hour. Our head of production, Seth Habhegger, does a great job at giving them creative titles that give you a little bit of a preview of what happens during each hour. Most Mondays have a Kitchen's Open segment, and he includes that in the description. But please don't tell Seth I paid him a compliment, though. It'll go to his head, and I'll never hear the end of it. I'm kind of kidding. We have a lot of fun during the segment, and my co-hosts are wonderful at playing along with whatever I come up with each week, even on the weeks when they don't get the script until the last minute. I'm sure you can tell that we don't script every moment in the segment, and it's a lot of fun to see what organically comes up, even when James takes us off the rails and we go down a side trail full of rabbit holes.
We are so grateful to you, our fabulous listeners, for joining us every day on The Morning Show. And I'd love to hear your feedback on the Kitchens Open segment in particular. You can email me at melissa.k@civicmedia.us. That's melissa.kaye@civicmedia.us. Thank you for joining us today for this special edition of The Kitchens Open, and have a happy and wonderful New Year's Day.
With The Kitchens Open.
Yeah. It's Monday, February 20th, and The Kitchen is open with an exciting announcement.
Yay!
We have a sponsor for our segment. Chatterbox Restaurant and Catering are sponsoring the segment, and we're delighted to have them on board.
We certainly are.
All right, well, on this very special day, a tiny human with massive hands was born. This young man would grow tall, very tall. He had to catch up to the hands. At some point along the way, he discovered various uses for his hands, palming a basketball, grabbing things from tall shelves, balancing watermelons, maybe. But what he discovered was the best use of these marvelous hands and his their true calling, holding bacon double cheeseburgers.
Yes!
So, in honor of James's birthday today, we are going to discuss all things bacon double cheeseburgers,
yes, we are.
Or double bacon cheeseburgers, whatever your preference.
So what exactly is a bacon double cheeseburger? Well, most of us know the answer to that question. It kind of says it in the title. But what makes a bacon double cheeseburger great? The answer to that is the beef.
Uh-huh.
There you go. But not only the beef, but how you prepare it. So we're going to talk about how to make homemade burgers taste just as awesome or sometimes better than the ones you can get at any of James's favorite restaurants.
So when you buy ground beef at the store, there's always a ratio on the package. Most often, it's two numbers as a percentage.
Mm-hmm.
These are the lean to fat ratios. The numbers indicate how much lean meat is in the package versus fat. The most common to see are 90-10, 80-20, and 70-30. Now, 30 is the highest you will ever see in the store because that's the highest percentage of fat that they can legally sell.
Yeah.
These rules create consistency for the consumer and ensure you're getting the right amount of meat for your money. Sometimes you'll see just one number on the package, like 85% lean or 90 lean. This means the exact same thing, they just left out the fat content, and you have to do the math yourself. Not so good for me, but, you know, the rest of y'all are just fine.
See, your math teacher was right when they said you'll have to use it someday.
Every day.
There you go. So 80-20 or 80% lean is the best ratio for burgers.
Yes.
It has a decent amount of the fat that it needs, and this is important. It contributes to the moisture to keep the burger from drying out while cooking. That's why you want a little bit more of fat in there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a different ratio in your fridge and really want to make a burger after you hear the segment.
Because you will.
You still can. We're going to give you some tips as how to make it better. So more fat, you're probably okay. Some of that fat's going to cook out anyway, but you'll end up with a pretty greasy burger. Mm-hmm. So slightly leaner beef is still okay, but you may need to add a little bit of oil to the pan. So if it's as lean as 90-10 or 93-7, so that's
that's
really,
really
lean meat, which is better for your cholesterol, but not so good for taste.
Mm-hmm.
You'll want to add some minced raw bacon into the beef to give it that extra fat and flavor.
Mm-hmm. Now, most recipes I saw tell you to make your patties thin before you cook them. Mm-hmm. This makes perfect sense since there's two beef patties on a bacon double cheeseburger.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, you would form quarter pound balls and form them into thin patties. You can stick them in the fridge for 20 to 30 minutes so they're a little more firm before you try to transfer them to the pan or the grill. But another way to make delicious burgers is smashing them directly into the pan.
Yeah.
These are called smash burgers, and they're all the rage right now. So to do this, you'll form 2-ounce balls with your 80% lean ground beef. When your pan is hot, you simply place your meatballs in the dry skillet and literally smash them with a large spatula.
Yeah.
So pastrychefonline.com recommends the Sasquatch spatula. And I just had to mention it because it's fun to say.
Yes, that's right.
The spatula weighs a literal pound and is sturdy enough to smash your burgers really thin.
There you go. The reason that you want to try to make these smash burgers is because you'll get a delicious, crispy surface because of the higher crust to the interior ratio and a short cooking time.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So you'll lose a little of the juices of the thick burger, but umami goodness, the yummy goodness, is totally worth it for the additional flavor that you're going to get. So this happens because of a scientific process, believe it or not, called Maillard reaction. It's a chemical reaction between an amino acid and the reducing sugar with the addition of heat. It's what's happening when you brown meat or toast bread or coffee beans. The process creates hundreds of different flavor compounds. Louis-Camille Maillard, that's the English pronunciation, or in French, now I'm going to butcher this because I don't speak French. Louis-Camille Maillard.
That was good.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It helps to have it phonetically in there. Thank you.
You're welcome.
He is the chemist who investigated this reaction in the 1910s. So this is 110 years ago.
Mm.
You really only need to season your meat with a little bit of salt and pepper. The rest of the burger components will really add to the flavor. So you want your meat to shine.
Yeah. Now let's talk about those other components.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, bacon is another big factor in this recipe, but also cheese. You can add other ingredients like caramelized onions and a burger sauce. And, of course, you'll need the bun.
Right.
And this is where James inserts his bun idea of the bagel.
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
I think that one of the things that you want to look out for with that bagel, make sure that it's toasted really good.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're putting any, like, the something like a slice of lettuce or something like that over the hole on the bottom. That's a nice idea. Cheese isn't bad, but it can dip out. That if you've got a good burger, the way I make them at least, there's going to be a little grease coming off of
that
thing.
Okay, we're going to cut him off right now.
Right.
Stop talking, James. All right, first bacon. So you have to have a local butcher, or if you have a local butcher or meat processor, this is your best bet for getting delicious, fresh bacon. Smith Brothers Meats in Colby is my go-to. They have a great selection of fresh meats and cheeses. Now, Newski's is another great place to get bacon, or any meat, really. They're located in Wittenberg, Wisconsin, not too far from here. So you can cook the bacon first until it's crispy, chewy. It's really easy to make it in the oven, but you can also make it in the pan. You want to keep an eye on it so it doesn't get too crispy. You don't want it to shatter when you take a bite, but a nice crisp with a little bit of chew is perfect.
Absolutely. Now for cheese, you can use anything you like. You can even use two different kinds of cheeses since they are in layers.
They're
in different layers, yeah. So cheddar and Swiss are a great combo, but if you're looking for the ultimate meltability, look no further than American cheese slices.
Ding, ding, ding.
The classic. The trick with whatever cheese you choose to use, it needs to be thinly sliced so it melts quickly and you get the ooey gooey goodness of the cheese.
Now, caramelized onions are an excellent addition and add more juiciness to your burger experience. How do you feel about onions there, James?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we won't ask James's opinion on this. Vidalia onions are great because they have that little bit of sweetness.
Yes.
But you can get that by adding a tablespoon or so of sugar or balsamic vinegar to plain old onions when you're sautéing them to get that. Just a little bit of sweet.
And you got to get them nice and caramelized.
Mm-hmm. It takes about 45 minutes to properly caramelize onions. So you want to start those first.
Or you could pre-make them, refrigerate them, and then just reheat them when you're ready to go.
Indeed.
For a sauce, you can make your own homemade burger sauce with a half a cup of mayo, 2 tablespoons of Worcestershire sauce, and black pepper.
Nice job on saying that.
Thank you very much. Been practicing for years.
Well done.
Or another great sauce is mayo, ketchup, mustard, pickle juice, salt, and pepper. You can even add onion and garlic if you like, but these delicious burgers really don't need a lot of additional flavor from the sauce because of the burger and cheese and bacon themselves.
Mm-hmm. So for the buns, if you're not going to go with James's idea of the bagel bun, you could try brioche burger buns. They're a delicious, rich bun made from butter, eggs, milk, and a touch of sugar. Mm-hmm. They have a ton of flavor and a soft crumb, but they are a little rich. Now, you can make them even richer by putting a little bit of the bacon grease on them before toasting them lightly in a pan or the oven.
So, time for burger assembly. So you have your caramelized onions and bacon ready to go. You've prepared your sauce and your burger buns or bagel, if you're James.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been toasted, so it's nice and crunchy.
Ready to go.
The ground beef has been proportioned out, and now you are ready for assembly.
All right. So, like we mentioned earlier, you want to heat a nonstick skillet to medium-high to high heat, and don't add oil unless your meat is very lean. Mm-hmm. Put two of your 2-ounce meatballs in the skillet and smash them with your spatula or bacon press.
Wonderful you want to way get to get them... your aggression out, too.
Yeah, yes. Mm-hmm. You want to get them nice and thin, but you only want to smash them the one time. Mm-hmm. So you need to resist smashing them again so you don't lose any more of the juice. Smash them down and thin out the edge and then leave them alone for mm-hmm. 2 minutes. Scrape the burger off the pan and flip it over. Cook for one additional minute. Add cheese to both patties, and on one, you can put the caramelized onions if you're not James. Stack the two patties together with the onions in the middle, assemble your burgers, and you're ready to taste deliciousness.
Another delicious option James may want to try is adding maple syrup. Oh, he perked up with that one.
Yeah, you did.
That's right, James. Two of your favorite things together. The best way to do this is after you've cooked your bacon, remove it from the pan and pour the drippings into a bowl. Put the bacon back in the pan and drizzle in 3 tablespoons of maple syrup and sprinkle with 1 teaspoon of pepper. Cook over medium heat, turn the bacon to coat it with the syrup. It will take about a minute for the bacon to glaze, and yum!
Now, if you want that actual fast food burger texture, wrap your completed and assembled burger in foil and allow them to steam for a couple minutes. This softens the buns and gives you that same burger texture.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it, James's favorite meal of all times. And I have to say, it sounds delicious.
Yeah.
I might just even have to make these tonight.
I know.
But I'll tell you what, if you don't feel like cooking, head over to Chatterbox Restaurant and have
That's
Kathy
right.
and her staff whip you up a bacon double cheeseburger. You'll get a delicious meal and excellent service.
Maybe we should talk to them about catering James's birthday party?
Ooh, good
bacon
idea.
Bacon double cheeseburger buffet line?
I like the sounds of
Isn't
that.
Isn't that great? Absolutely.
All right, with that, unless, James, you have anything to add about bacon double cheeseburgers?
No, you're just brats. Both of you are brats.
With that, we'll close the kitchen.
That's right.
In Iraq, our truck hit a roadside bomb. I had about 16 surgeries on my hand so that I could regain function. And when I came home, I needed a new roof due to a storm. And my electrical was deemed unsafe. And I was about to lose homeowner's insurance as well. I didn't really know where to go in order to get help. And so I applied for Operation Homefront Critical Financial Assistance Program. They've really been a blessing. Operation Homefront is a safety net. A lot of veterans, they fall through the cracks sometimes. And Operation Homefront, they catch us. It's been a blessing to us. It's a blessing to other veteran families. And it's good to know that when we come home, there are people who are there that care about us and want to see us do well and want to see us succeed. And we feel it and we appreciate that. I would say you guys are angels behind closed doors.
Visit OperationHomefront.org to learn more.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
Haven't been checking out Director's Cut lately? Well, here's some of the guests you may have missed.
Local legend from Four on the Floor, musical magician, one of my favorites, Pete Ravel. Michael Charles, Chicago Blues Hall of Fame, a man who has played with Buddy Guy.
Bria Krieger joining us, a local artist.
To welcome to the WFHR stage, the legends, the lizards themselves.
Best-selling author, Mystery Science Theater 3000 legend, Midwest's own Mary Jo Peel.
Director's Cut, every Sunday night from 8 to 9 on Locally Grown Radio.
Smiles are powerful. They spread joy, laughter, and hope. But not everyone gets a fair chance at a smile. Every 3 minutes, a baby is born with a cleft, making it difficult to talk, hear, eat, and even breathe. In America, most children with clefts receive immediate care, but others around the world may never have access to the surgery they need to thrive. Smile Train is changing that. As the world's largest cleft charity, Our sustainable model has sponsored more than 1.5 million smiles. We offer training and financial support to local medical professionals so they can provide life-changing surgery and other essential services at no cost to families.
It's more than to see these children, to hear the difference that we make. And for me, being born with a cleft lip and palate, knowing what they went through is so life-changing for me.
Help us change the world one smile at a time. To learn more, visit smiletrain.org/learn.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. A series of strong earthquakes has rattled the west coast of Japan.